Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Well, hello everyone from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Wild World on this magical network we call Blog Talk Radio. As we say hello to our listeners around the world, Ireland, England, New Zealand, Australia, and even the small community of Paragon, Indiana. Big hello, and as always, here with me in the Wild World News Studios, well, I should say, in the news studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, the honorable, distinguished, and always humble, and always on time, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Batson. Well, the school year is rounding down.
It is winding down. Our school visits are just about over. We've got, a handful left. But you know what I'm excited about tonight? Can I give you a little hint, Dr. Day? Let me give you a little hint.
Please.
That's what we're excited about tonight. Rodney Justo,
that's right,
from the Atlanta Rhythm Section will be with us, and all the way from his home in Tampa, Florida. And, man, what a great show we're going to have tonight.
Agreed. Yes, yeah. That sound, that was a major part of our existence.
Oh, it was, man. And they had so many hits. Gosh almighty. So it's really a privilege. I mean, we've had some really heavy-duty rock and roll people on this program, but tonight seems very, very special. We feel quite honored to have Mr. Justo join us, so this would be a fun show for everybody. We want to remind everyone that this part of Wild World is brought to you by Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Weekend and Expo. It's all on video on demand. Go to their website, Chautauqua, let me spell that for you, Chautauqua LakeBigfoot.com. If you're a fan of the Bigfoot programs on the Discovery Channel, Animal Planet, 6 hours of video, including Steve Calls, I'm so sorry, Melissa Hovey, Billy Willard, and the infamous Bob Gimlin. It's all available for just $4.99. And that is on ChautauquaLakeBigfoot.com. They make it possible for Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Good evening. This is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News for May 15th. Now, don't you have a birthday this month?
I do. Yes, I do. We're forgetting about those. It's tomorrow. So.
That's right.
Yeah, the big 16.
So, all of our listeners, please give Mr. Batson a happy birthday.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you don't want to tell him how old you are, do you?
Oh, I don't care. I'm still a very young 62.
That's right.
So, what the heck? So, I'm not a bit ashamed about that, no.
Well, that's a good age to be.
In fact, if you would have asked me when I was about 20 years old, and they told me I would have made it till 62, I'd have looked at them like they were nuts. So,
yeah.
You know, absolutely.
Yeah, we're all happy to still be here.
Yes, we are.
All right, well, let's start the Wild World News out in Bangor, Maine.
Oh.
Well, it turns out that a sick, bald eagle found sitting on a Bangor sidewalk last week was a mother. Yes, she had babies. Well, an expert scaled a nearly 100-foot tree to rescue two hungry but otherwise healthy eaglets, estimated to be about 6 weeks old. Now, the eagles were brought to the avian haven in Freedom, where they were nursed and will eventually be reunited with their mother.
Well, that's cool. Was she, and she was injured?
Yes, she was. Probably flew into a window, like most birds do in a residential downtown area.
Yeah. You know, there's a fella here in Greencastle. You talk about an Einstein. He found an eagle, and he took it to his apartment and kept it in a cage, and he didn't know what he was caring for. I mean, the symbol of our country, you know what I'm saying?
And he was probably feeding it Fruit Loops.
I have never seen an eagle in my life.
The voice of Rodney, you haven't, Rodney. You need
never.
To come to my house.
Never.
Wow.
I mean, in his natural habitat, flying around, never.
Oh, my goodness.
I grew up about a mile and a half, 2 miles from Busch Gardens. When I was a kid, that's all they had was like a bird show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I saw an eagle sitting there, but, you know, I'm sure wings have been clipped so it couldn't fly away, but I've never seen an eagle flying around, never.
Oh, my
Rodney,
Lord.
I used to work at Busch Gardens and lived about 2 miles away because sometimes I'd walk to work.
Dude, are you serious? In Tampa?
Yep. Hillsborough County.
Oh, my gosh. I grew right by Chamberlain High School. Of course, there was no Chamberlain High School when I moved there, but like I said, it was just a bird show. There was nothing there.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
I spent a lot of time at Lowry Park.
Mm-hmm. That's something. I played at Lowry Park as a kid for President Johnson.
Is that right?
Yep, right. He was running for president, and I had a little local band, you know, and they had us play before he came on, you know. Pretty
that
cool.
That was a great little park, Safety City.
Yeah, that's gone, I believe.
The zoo there now, I was there a couple of years ago. It's fantastic.
The zoo was just really like the number one family zoo or something in the country.
I would have to agree. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I've never seen San Diego Zoo, but that's one that I thought was supposed, would have been the number one zoo. I mean.
Well, we love zoos.
Yes, we do.
All right, I keep taking my son there hoping his real parents will pick him up.
This is going to be a great show.
All right, I agree. All right, Mr. Batson, I think you've beaten this record before.
What's that?
Rapid City, South Dakota, the Reptile Gardens tourist attraction, has slithered its way into the record books. The facility, which has more than 200 species of reptiles from around the world, is listed in the latest Guinness edition of World Records. And it's supposed to be the home of the largest collection of reptiles.
Well, maybe in my old days, I came pretty darn close to that. I remember when, I lived in that, I had an apartment, and I kept close to 50 species of venomous snakes alone. So, of course, the apartment did not know about that. Oh, gosh. That's another story in its own.
Didn't a couple of rattlers get loose?
No, that did not happen.
Okay, all right.
Have you ever considered opening a church?
That'd be
awesome. One of those fellows just died recently. they had to bury one of those snake handlers down there in Tennessee not long ago.
Sorry. All right, well, let's go. Our next story takes us to Albuquerque, New Mexico now. Who do we know in Albuquerque?
We know Doug Hodel, the herpetologist, the director of herpetology at the Rio Grande Zoo, though it's called now the Biopark Zoo in Albuquerque.
That's right.
Been on the show.
Very good friend of ours.
Yes, he is.
And you were pretty much his mentor. If it wasn't for you, he wouldn't be a curator there at the zoo.
Well,
I'd like
to take a little credit toward that. But
you'll have to take a little credit for it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what's going on in Albuquerque? Well, there's an explosion of grasshoppers. Now, it isn't dangerous, but it's at least a nuisance because of the damage they cause to plants. Rain last fall created favorable conditions for the grasshoppers to lay their eggs, and many survived until spring. Yes, they lived over the winter because of the mild weather.
Mm.
So they're bigger and better and stronger than they've ever been. Now, one time I was in southern Colorado visiting my great-grandfather's cabin that he built back in the 20s, and I experienced the same thing. Grasshoppers covering every inch of the ground. If you took a step, it was like a waterfall. When the grasshoppers hit the other grasshoppers, they would create a little waterfall. And yeah, it was a concentric ring of grasshoppers moving in every direction.
Is this a true story, Dr. Day, or would you
eating everything in their sight?
they have the locust deals over in Africa and in Egypt that consume all the crops, you know.
Which are the same things as we call grasshoppers. So.
Right.
Yeah. All right, well, spring is in the air, so we've got a lot of babies showing up. Jackson, Mississippi, 7 endangered red wolf pups have Choctaw names now. Yes, the zoo had a weekend ceremony to name the pups born on March 30th.
Cool.
Chief Phyllis Anderson of the Mississippi Band of Choctaw Indians named the largest pup Nixumpa Ixho, which means no fear.
Can I hear that name one more time?
Yes, you can. Nixumpa Ixho, which means no fear.
Oh,
well. Now, you have a couple of the largest wolves I've encountered in my life that you treat like puppies that just roam around your wildlife enclosures. And
yeah,
they're just part of the family.
Yeah, they surround our bed every night, and God help anybody to try to come in our bed.
yeah, they're quite large. They can stand up and look me in the eyes.
Yeah, along with our black lab in St. Bernard, which looks like a Newfoundland. The three of them, that's quite the pack.
I bet. Now, I haven't met that. I'll have to come out soon.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're still talking babies.
Oh, good.
Giant panda at Smithsonian's National Zoo in Washington, D.C. Yes, Bao Bao, the giant panda cub, can often be found playing outdoors now. She spends much of her time in the trees and of her outdoor exhibit, and if you have really sharp eyes, you might spot her hanging out there.
Well.
We got meerkat pups at the Brevard Zoo in Melbourne, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
The zoo welcomed 4 meerkat pups in March. Each weighed about 3.5 ounces.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine that. They began venturing out a couple of weeks ago, and now are acting like their parents, mimicking their behavior.
Oh, their
parents.
We've
also got a baby giant anteater at the Santa Barbara Zoo in California.
Mm-hmm.
The baby giant anteater was born March 1st and is being hand-raised by the keepers. I guess they're having to use eyedroppers of ants.
I wonder what the zoo has been a
leader in the national study of giant anteaters.
You know, when you're telling that story, it just came to mind. I wonder what Dave Davies would say about that.
Well, Larry, you know, I've actually seen a giant anteater. I've eaten a few ants in my life, so.
I'm so sorry.
I wonder what George Carlin would say about it. Baby giant.
Exactly. No, I see more on that deal.
Right?
Oh, God,
jumbo shrimp.
Right. Right.
Dave's been on the show, so he can laugh with us on that.
Oh, Dave, we love Dave.
Yeah, he's the best.
Yeah, one of our favorite guests.
Yeah.
The story you told about slicing the cones of his speakers with a razor blade to give it that rough sound.
Yeah.
That's what rock and roll is all about.
Yeah,
That's right.
All right, now this is one of my favorite plants in the world. We're heading off to Ann Arbor, Michigan. Visitors at the University of Michigan's Mathai Botanical Gardens are waiting for an 80-year-old agave plant to flower. Now, commonly known as the century plant, the agave americana blooms once and then dies.
Really? Wow.
I never knew that.
Where is it from, if I missed that?
Originally started in Africa, the agaves.
Oh, okay.
They're pretty much a part of the aloe vera family. But Mexico has a large population. And what are they famous for?
Tequila.
Tequila. One of my favorite things.
Well.
But, yeah, that's pretty wild. Like they call them, they're, you know, part of the century plant family. Well, hence the name century, 100 years old, and they bloom and die.
Yeah.
But we appreciate them giving their lives for us.
Yeah.
All right, if you have a good way to count bears, call the researchers at New Mexico State University. Seem to have a problem with that.
Counting bears?
Yes.
Well, they don't have enough fingers and toes, or what's the deal?
I guess. They just need some help.
And, I can count two right now.
Count two bears.
Yeah, I can see them from my studio window as we speak. Yeah. Two,
all right,
that's
now,
all.
To all our gastropod listeners tonight.
Yes.
Kennewick, Washington. Well, a federal grants will help the state continue to send out a team to go after snails, yes, and invasive moths that like to munch on grapes.
Mm.
Yes, we've got squads of federal agents going out to...
I wonder what that project's costing the taxpayer.
This is in Washington, you say?
Yes. Kennewick, Washington. Yes, we're. I've got nothing else to do, so we'll go after the snails and the moths.
Gosh.
All right. Well, here's a follow-up to our story we had a couple of weeks ago. A federal judge ordered a stop to coyote hunting near the world's only wild population of endangered red wolves, because as we've reported, the animals look so familiar to the coyotes that many of them have been killed in the last few weeks.
Well, if that's what it takes. I mean, of course, I'm no big fan of hunting coyotes, but in fact, I went to the meat locker the other day picking up beef scraps for our tigers, and the good old boy said, "Are you using that to hunt coyotes?" I said, "Sir, I do not hunt coyotes." I can remember my good friend Billy Sandiver calling them God's dogs because they're so important to the ecosystem. I gave him a little talk, and he agreed with me.
And as we know, nature has its way of taking care of overpopulations. We don't need to go out and hunt them.
No, not – well, you know, the deer season may be different because – there's more deer now than there was 200 years ago, at least in this part of the country.
We've chased off the coyotes and the wolves.
We've created a with the farmers' fields, they like to live along tree lines, and now there's that many more tree lines in a farmer's fields raising corn and soybean food supplements for them. So, yeah, they've exploded. So... And I don't have any problem with a deer hunter as long as they use what they've killed.
I agree.
When they do it just for the sport, just for the kicks, that bothers me. But who am I?
Yeah, you know, well, as long as you use what you take.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, we're coming out of a full moon, and as always, warn our listeners, there are more animal attacks during the full moon than any other time of the month.
Ooh, that means I better watch out for the wife.
Yes. All right. No.
Or she better look out for you.
Well, I lovingly call her the bipedal wolverine. So.
Are you both in Indiana right now?
Yeah.
Henry's in Indianapolis. I'm about an hour west of Indianapolis.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm sure you've been to Indianapolis many times. Haven't you, Rodney?
I've been there. I wouldn't say many times.
Mm-hmm.
We just played about a couple hours out of Indianapolis at a very peculiar event about 2 years ago.
Really?
I'm trying to think of the name of the city. Oh, my gosh. It was past Bloomington, south of Bloomington. I mean, it was It had a Hoosier Hottie. They had a big Hoosier Hottie contest.
Oh, my.
Which was not family rated. And it was a bunch of motorcycle people. For some reason, some people, like motorcycle gangs, like to hire us, you know, so we work for this, some of their stuff once in a while.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
It was very bizarre because the night before we were in an Indian reservation in Mississippi. So we had to fly to Jackson, drive, check into our hotel, drive 2 hours to the gig, drive 2 hours back because we had to catch a plane out of Jackson early in the morning, then fly to Indianapolis, then drive another 2 hours to this city, wherever the heck it was, driving, do sound check, drive 45 minutes to our room, drive back, and then we didn't start till like 11:30 at night.
Of course.
Till 1 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
Man, that was rough. And then we had to get up early the next morning to catch a plane home. So it was a very peculiar weekend.
Yeah. Well, you know, as we when we talked to Al Jardine, rock and roll is a hard job.
It can be, but, you know, it's not like we don't go to work every day from 9 to 5 either.
That's true. Yeah.
It's not the easiest thing in the world. It's hard, but it's hard in spurts.
Yeah.
You know, the playing is the easiest part.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, that is the easiest part, the rehearsal, the travel, the, you know, all the other baloney that goes with it, the not sleeping. That's the tough part.
Yeah. Okay,
Dr. Well, let's finish up the Wild World news tonight with who got older this last week?
Oh, my God.
Now, how old
is where I came in.
How old do you think Tommy Rowe is?
Tommy Rowe?
Yeah.
72.
Dude, right on the head.
Hello.
All right, how about singer Billy Joel?
Billy Joel is 67.
Oh, close, 65.
Oh, okay.
All right, how
that
about
is
Donovan?
Donovan?
Donovan is 70.
68 this week. All right, counterculture icon, Wavy Gravy.
Oh,
116. Okay, maybe I missed it by one or two.
I can't believe Wavy Gravy is still alive. He is 78 this week, today.
God love him.
All right, same as it ever was, David Byrne.
50-something, 55, 6.
Rodney?
Sort of think he's that much younger than me. I'm going to say 60.
Well, he's the same age as Mr. Batson tomorrow. He'll be 62.
Oh, well.
All right, now, here's one from way back, Burt Bacharach.
Oh, God.
78.
Burt, believe it or not, is 86.
Shut up.
You're kidding.
I almost gave it a big number because, you know, Hal David just died at about 91 or 92.
That's right, yeah.
My goodness.
All right,
wow,
what about...
he's 86.
86. You know the way to stand on
that. Winwood.
Steve?
Steve is 67.
Oh, close running, 66.
Okay.
Good.
All right, Stevie Wonder got older this week, too.
Oh, he did. Oh, that's a hard one. 71.
Wow. I didn't know Stevie was older than me.
How old is he, Dr. Day?
Stevie Wonder is 64.
Oh, 64. I said 71. 64.
I said
71. Yeah, that makes sense. Oh, I said, okay. That's where I heard it.
He started in the business when he was about 6, I think. So,
all right.
Steve.
Spill the wine, Eric Burdon.
Oh, my.
70.
Mr. Batson?
I'm going to do like Wheel of Fortune, 69. Or not there. Price is Right.
Eric Burdon turned 73 this week.
Wow.
My goodness.
I didn't think he was that much older than me either.
Yeah. Talent. All right. Now, on this day in 1954, the Fender Stratocaster guitar, created by Leo Fender, was officially released.
Really? Well, God love him.
All right, we've gone a little long with our Wild World news tonight. I'll end it with this. When Heinz ketchup leaves the bottle, it travels at a rate of 25 miles per year. That's the Wild World news for May 15th.
Once again, a great job done by Dr. Day and his staff at the Wild World News headquarters, newly renovated, now HD in Indianapolis, Indiana. In fact, they even have new paneling up, so it's quite spectacular. We want to tell everyone, be sure you check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com. It tells all about our wildlife rescue work that we do, also our wildlife education programs, and our wonderful Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends. Lots of information about the latest things going on in our animal world, plus plenty of great videos that we found and pictures. It's all fun at Larry the Animal Guy and Friends. They all make it possible for Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. From the Atlanta Rhythm Section. Boy, Dr. Day, that voice is just like honey, isn't it?
I know.
Oh, my Lord. Rodney Justo's with us. Good evening, Rodney.
How are you?
We're fantastic. My gosh.
What interesting news, man. I mean, you guys have dug up some interesting stuff.
It happens every week, Rodney.
Oh, my gosh, it's scary.
Yep.
Yes,
25 miles a year, please. You don't think I'm going to use that story on someone?
You may even use that on stage, huh, Rod?
Yeah, you know, I heard a great story the other day. Do you know Darryl Rhodes? Have you heard that name? He's a comedian.
No.
He's great, but he's got a very different kind of act. And you start talking about the Indians and out west, and he told a Roger Miller story. Roger Miller grew up in Oklahoma, and he claimed that he was the only Caucasian in his school. And he said that, because they were all Indians, he said one day they had a school dance in the rain for 30 days. He told me that story today. I've been dying to tell that story to somebody.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, you know the old story. I've got friends in West Virginia, and there's an old legend that if you need rain, what you do is you find a rattlesnake, you kill it, you lay it in the garden upside down, and it will rain. So a friend of mine lives in West Virginia, and the neighbor comes down, and he looked in the back of his pickup, and he saw I had a dead rattlesnake back there. He says, "What are you going to do with that?" And he says, "Well, we need some rain, so I'm going to put it in my garden, and so we can get some rain." So the guy left, and he said, "Well, wouldn't you know it? That night it started to rain, and it rained all night, it rained all day, it rained the next night. I mean, it didn't quit for like almost 3 days." And he finally called him up. He says, "Hey," he said, "you need to take that rattlesnake out of your garden." And he did, and guess what? Quit raining.
Wow.
I was hoping
that's
the rattlesnake wasn't dead and it bit him.
No. That's a true story. Yeah, that's, you know, truth is always stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's great to have you on the program, Rodney. In fact,
thank you.
We talked to a mutual friend, Bobby Caldwell, and he said, "Gosh, you got to see about having Rodney on." And I've had a chance to look into your career a little bit, but I'm so totally fascinated. You played and toured with the legendary Roy Orbison.
Yes, sir. He was a great, great guy.
Oh my gosh.
He was a very genteel, sweet kind of guy. He was the type of guy, and I saw it happen. I mean, many times. Like, I did a recording session one time, and there was somebody who said, "Man, I like those cufflinks. He'd take them off and give them to you."
Oh, wow.
No, I mean, he was a real dichotomy because he was kind of cheap, you know. He wouldn't pay us, but he'd give us cufflinks, you know. After every tour, he has to go chase our money down at Acuff Rose, you know. And I used to say, "Roy, shouldn't we be owing you money?" You're the rich guy here, you know.
Yeah.
But no, what? I was very fortunate, you know. I started touring with him when I was, I think, 20 years old.
Wow.
So you're 20 years old, and all of a sudden you're going all over the world. And, that's, you know, I always say the only thing that kept me out of college was high school. But I got an education, you know, by being fortunate enough to travel around the world and meet people and learn how to deal with different situations. You know, that was my education, you know. And I,
sure,
anybody that's ever spent any time with Roy will tell you what a sweet, sweet guy he was. In fact, I'll tell you, people always want to know what he was like.
Mm-hmm.
I'd known Roy for years before I started working with him. I had a local band like everybody has, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in the old days, before the Beatles and the Animals and the Searchers and the Stones, recording artists were all single acts, you know, one person.
Sure.
So they would go to town, and nobody had their own band because they couldn't afford to take a band around with them. So mm-hmm. they would play with a local band. And for the most part, they all did the same songs. They did The Twist, they did What Did I Say, you know, and a Bo Diddley song or something, and because mm-hmm. all the bands knew those songs. And so that's how I got to meet Roy. But
wow.
When he finally hired me, I took Bobby Goldsboro's place. Bobby Goldsboro recorded on his own and had a hit. And the band wanted to work when Roy didn't work, so they talked about hiring me.
Uh-huh.
And the day before I was going on the road with Roy, I was sitting in a little diner in Tampa, Florida, with Frankie Valli, because my band had just backed up the Four Seasons.
Oh, my.
And I tell Frankie, it was sitting in a diner very late at night, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. He orders a cheese omelet.
Mm-hmm.
And he turns to me and he says, "Rodney, this is the best cheese omelet I've had since I left New Jersey." Now,
wow.
I got to tell you guys, I'd never heard of a cheese omelet. I had no idea what he was ordering, a cheese omelet. I'd never heard of such a thing. But I thought it was so cool that Tampa had something he thought was as good as New Jersey.
Yeah.
Well, we started talking. I said to him, I said, "Well, you know, Frankie, this is my last day with my band. I'm leaving to go on the road with Roy Orbison." He says, you're going to work for the nicest guy in show business. I went, really? I mean, I'd known him, but I didn't know he had that kind of reputation throughout all the show business. No, Rodney. He says, that's his, he's known for that. He's known for being the nicest guy around. I went, wow, that's nice to hear.
Oh, yeah.
And when he died, like in, I guess it's 1988 or 89, I opened up Rolling Stone magazine, and the first paragraph says something like, Roy Orbison was the sweetest guy in rock and roll. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, from the time I went to work with him when I was 20 years old to the time that he dies, he still keeps that kind of reputation in the music business.
Sure.
You know, he was just a very, very sweet guy. I mean, if he got mad, his expression was like, if somebody did something wrong, Roy would say, like, well, fellas, we just might have to go shake a finger at him. Shake a finger at him. That's the way they talk in my neighborhood.
Well, there's that great story Tom Petty tells when they were doing the Traveling Wilburys, and he went up to Roy and said, Roy, he says, you might be the best singer in the whole world. And Roy says, yep, I might be.
Well, you know, Roy is very humble but very confident at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
You know, he was a very, 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 he was a sweet guy. It's a big loss to not have Roy Orbison. And people that, you know, I'll tell you something, Larry. You know, people ask me, that when they know I work with him, people say, what did you learn from Roy Orbison? Well, it's not like I learned how to sing, you know.
Right.
But, and maybe I kind of knew it already because I had good parents, but I learned how to treat people. You know, Roy, after, like, Pretty Woman and It's Over, he made quite a few crap records. They just weren't very good. But Roy is the type of person, you played a concert or whatever, and people came to talk to him, he would talk and give them attention, look at him in the face. With disc jockeys, he was very respectful. So, you know, there was a time when in radio where disc jockeys decided what they wanted to play.
Sure.
No, that doesn't exist anymore. But disc jockeys would always give Roy's records a chance. They would play his records because they always knew he was such a good guy. They say, well, I'm going to play this record for him because I met him and I liked him. And if the public responds, that's great. At least I'm giving him a chance.
Wow.
So, you know, I always think back on how Roy would treat people.
Yeah, and, you know, here's an interesting tidbit that I found out, and I think it's true, but I'm not sure or not. But, you know, Roy did tour with the Beatles in, what, 62, 63, I think?
Yeah, it was about then, I guess.
And George Harrison talks about Roy riding Pretty Woman in the back of their tour bus while they were going down the road. And
I don't know if that's true or not. As I understand, Roy had a co-writer named Bill Dees.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. And the genesis of the song had to do with Roy's first wife.
Oh.
I think where Roy, Claude had come to Roy and said, Roy, I need some money or something. And Bill Dees says, Pretty Woman don't need no money. Okay, so I know that was the genesis of the song, you know.
Well, the reason I brought that up when I was playing, fooling around with a guitar once, I realized very quickly that the guitar introduction to Pretty Woman, if you change the notes just a couple different ways, just a little bit, it's Day Tripper.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, it's just one or two notes.
Well, that's, yeah. I could imagine them being influenced by Roy. The song that I always thought was so Roy Orbison was She's a Woman. My love, don't give me presents. Don't think.
I always thought
that was very Roy Orbison-ish.
That would have been a fun fly to be on the wall with when those four young guys that hadn't made it yet were touring with such a great.
Well, you know, you talk about not having money to take people on the road. See, what happened was even Roy, he had his own band. The first person that I knew of that ever had their own band to travel with him was Roy.
Mm-hmm.
The only the second guy was Bobby V, by the way. And Roy didn't make enough money at the time, like when he played Europe, to take the whole band with him to begin with. So what he did was he would say, okay, every time I go to Europe or take a trip to, you know, out of the country other than Canada, I'm going to take one of you guys with me. So the one he played with the Beatles, he took Goldsboro. And then he went to Australia right after that, and he took the drummer we had at the time, Paul Garrison. That was the, either Rolling Stones and Roy Orbison or Beach Boys and Roy Orbison. I think it was the Beach Boys and Roy Orbison tour. So that was his thing. Then he got to where he was doing better, and then he could take the whole band, to the whole band to Australia. He took us to Europe. So, like I said, to be 20 years old, and next thing you know, you're traveling around the world, and, you know, I'll tell you how dumb I was. I mean, we were in Finland. We were in Helsinki. Now, mind you, like I said, I'm a poor kid from Tampa, Florida, Helsinki. For some reason, it wasn't until many years later I realized I was in Finland. I thought I was in Poland. Because to me, Helsinki sounds like it should be in Poland, you know? Helsinki sounds like actually a Polish bowler, you know? Like
I'm in Poland with Roy Orbison, everybody.
Yeah, right.
That's funny.
Like Dublinski is up there now, is bowling on for the Labatt's team.
Yeah. So did you when you were with Roy, did you have a chance to meet a lot of these bands that would later become big deals, kind of, I guess, the British Invasion and all that?
Yes. You know, we were, we palled up with the Small Face. We worked a tour all over, you know, United Kingdom with the Small Faces, the Small Feces, as we used to call them. And we had a blast. Boy, these guys could drink. Oh, my God, could they drink. Oh. But they were great guys, and we were big promoters of the Small Faces. We just couldn't wait for them to come to America. And we said these guys will kill when they got here. But they only had one hit, and I ran into them when, you know, when the Atlanta Rhythm Section was just starting around, we'd been together for a couple of years, but in 1972 they came to Atlanta, and I went to see them. By this time they were the Faces because Stevie had left to form Humble Pie.
Yeah,
with Rod Stewart was with them. But you know, we played. You talk about before they got big. We played the first date that Rod Stewart sang with the Jeff Beck Group.
Where he didn't look at the audience the entire time, he was so stage-struck.
Well, it's Jeff. Here's my recollection.
Okay.
Jeff was having problems with the drummer.
Uh-oh.
And he would get mad. We'd do two shows a night because we're playing relatively small theaters, you know. And he would get mad, just throw his guitar down the stage in the middle of his act and walk off. Well, he did this for about 3 or 4 days, two shows a day. Well, finally the promoter says, Jeff, enough of nothing. But you start throwing your guitar around and quitting the stage, we're going to get somebody else. Show comes next day, boom, he gets mad, throws his guitar down, they fire Jeff Beck.
Oh, my.
But Rod Stewart was his singer, and the press didn't love him. You know, I remember one of the magazines came out, Jeff Beck's new group, played with Roy Orbison, blah, blah, blah. His new group since leaving the Yardbirds. It sounded really good, but they have a real yech singer named Rod Stewart. And I remember seeing that, and I went, first place, I don't think they should be blasting this guy. And secondly, I like him. I like the way he looked. I like the way he sang. He was really cool.
Yeah.
You know, but that if there's an example of somebody before they were big, I guess that Jeff Beck and Rod Stewart would certainly fill that qualification, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And the Small Faces, who
yeah.
got put in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year, last year.
I saw the Faces live, and it was one of the best concerts I can recall in my entire concert-going career, I guess you'd call it. God, they were good.
Yeah. You know what? You talk about what you learn from people,
mm-hmm.
and I think I use that more now in the Atlanta Rhythm Section than ever, is that people want to see other people having a good time. If they wanted to see miserable sourpuss musicians, they go to jazz concerts, you know.
Or home.
Or classical music, you know, watch people like, oh, I'm dying playing this stuff. Oh, I'm suffering. You know, and now people say, you guys look like you're having so much fun up there, you know, because
yeah.
we are.
Well,
but I think the Small Faces, you know, set the bar for that. Those guys had a blast.
Well, it showed. Cause
I guess when you're drunk, you got to have a blast.
Yeah, I guess so. That's, man. Hey, we're with Rodney Justo from Atlanta Rhythm Section. We're going to take a short break. We've got a couple PSAs. We'll be right back.
All right. You have that? I'm sorry to hear
that.
No,
we're not. We've got a long way to go. We'll be right back. Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh, boy, a kitty cat.
Sassy, the kitty cat's yelling.
What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters?
It's bobcat heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean?
Oh, not.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland-urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
We're Rascal Flats. There's a place where ordinary people do extraordinary things every day. That place is called the American Red Cross. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host,
Larry Batson.
We'll be back with Rodney Justo in just a moment with the Atlanta Rhythm section. I know we've got a huge audience tonight. I've already received lots of emails from fans, and it's great to have them along. It's been a great show. We also want to remind everyone that this part of the program is brought to you by McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado. We call it God's Country. Right on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park, if you've never had the opportunity to go out west, you owe it to yourself at least once in your lifetime. It's an absolutely spiritual place. Boy, unbelievable place to stay. Overlooking the Front Range, and you'll have wildlife around your cabin, bighorn sheep, elk. It's absolutely fabulous. They have a webcam that goes all the time, so you can see what's going on out there right now. It might be kind of dark, but it's McGregorMountainLodge.com, and we appreciate them being on with us and making part of our program possible. Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Singing that one, you know, I'm the original singer. Then I left, and Ronnie came in. Then I came back. Then
the hell did
it's
I play
a long
that
story.
You
know, it's my fourth time in the band. It's a long. It's very incestuous. It's so
what's
funny. Yeah,
like
we have a reputation now for being very low maintenance, easy to deal with. You know, blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. But, dude, man, at one time we were the exact opposite of that.
Oh, really?
I mean, you've never seen guys complain like we used to.
Tell us.
We played the Cow Palace one time, and I don't want to say which guy it was, but
yeah,
I'm walking down the promoter, and yeah, I'm walking in with the promoter, and one of the guys in the band goes, "Oh, my God, what a dump." I'm thinking to myself, I worked my whole life to play this dump. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, God, please just play the gig. Shut up.
Does it bother you that, you know, everybody wants the fame, and once they get the fame and the fortune and all the things that come along with it, then they don't know how to react to it?
Yeah, it bothers me. It bothers me a lot. It bothers me that people get so ingracious, especially when you know people that came from nothing,
mm-hmm.
who after a while start thinking they got it coming to them.
Yeah.
That's what bothers me. You know, and it's, I don't know, man. I just, you know, there's a lot of haters out there. You know, and I'm fed up with all the haters, man. You know, it's like, if you come from a Latin background, they get very peculiar. You know, like, I got a friend of mine as a guitar player. He's a wonderful guy, but he's just always thinking negative stuff. If I told him, I says, "Hey, man, how about Bill? You heard Bill hit the lottery, got $10 million." He would say, "Yeah, after taxes, what's he got? $6 million?" You know.
I know those people.
That kind of thing. That. You know, I don't get it, man. Just, I don't know, just, I'm not much for complaining, you know.
Well, it's such a luxury. I mean, even in this day and age now, I mean, I'm not saying fame can come a little easier, but it can because of now the social networking and the records that you guys put together and the records these youngsters are trying to do on their computers, there's
mm-hmm.
no comparison. I mean,
no, of course not, of course not.
Yeah. We had Shelley Leibowitz, who's with SRI Records in Hollywood, and we were talking about the difference between vinyl and digital, and it's we listen to those vinyl albums, and Rodney, we were really lucky when we grew up.
Yeah. No,
I mean,
doubt.
The music that we had a chance to, especially you, I mean, you toured with Roy Orbison and then went on with one of the great bands that I think of our time, of Atlanta Rhythm Section, with all these mega hits, and it's and that's the background of our lives. And every time I've had an artist on like yourself, I want to thank you for what you have provided as far as entertainment.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. You know, I got to tell you that I saw a TV show recently on HBO about Mickey Mantle.
Mm-hmm.
And Mickey Mantle, apparently, he didn't take care of his money. So when his career ended, you know, he didn't have a lot of money to sit around and do nothing with, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing saved him, and that he retired right about the time people started charging money for autographs. If you remember, you used to ask people
uh-huh.
for an autograph and they just gave it to you.
For sure.
Now they set you up and they charge you, especially in particular athletes.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw this thing and they said grown men would walk up to Mickey Mantle getting ready to get his autograph. You could see them tears welling up in their eyes.
Yes.
And it wasn't so much looking at Mickey Mantle. It's they're looking at a guy that connected them to when they were young and
mm-hmm.
watching Mickey Mantle. You know, even me, I can remember Mickey Mantle as a kid, you know, running with a big, you know, broad back and the number 7 on a pinstripe uniform. And he had a way of running around the bases like he almost limped around the bases. You know, it's a connection to a time.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of that. We play dates and people tell me, he says, man, thank you so much. I feel like just like I did when I was in college when I'm looking at you guys.
Oh, it's so true. And you talk about bringing a tear to one's eye. I've had that tear on this show many times with our musical heroes, excuse me, that we've had on this program. And it's just and to realize really how what great people they are. I cannot think of one dead we've had, Dr. Day, on our – well, I can, but I won't.
Incredibly lucky.
We have been.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
all in all, personally speaking, I feel the same way. There's very few real jerks that I worked with in,
mm-hmm.
you know, 50 something years. Very
yeah.
few. I can only think of like 2.5.
Oh, well, let's hear about those 2.
Well, I'll tell you one.
Okay.
Much I don't like the diss of Van Morrison. He's just like
tell us the story
behind
Van Morrison.
We were in the Candyman at the time,
yeah.
which was Roy's band. You know, we were playing in New York at a club called The Scene, which was the place to play. We would play, and Jimi Hendrix and the guys from the Rascals and Mamas and Papas. They would come and request songs from us like they were kids. What's the name of the bass player from The Who? John Entwistle.
Yes.
God, can I play with you guys, man? It was just great, man. I forgot what story I was going to tell you, but and Van Morrison played with us,
mm-hmm.
and he was using our equipment, and he kept putting his hand over the microphone. And back, you know, microphones weren't then as they are now. You put your hand over the end of a microphone, and start squealing. So
yeah.
He'd put his hand over the microphone and play harmonica, or someone start squealing, you know. And do it again. They started kicking our equipment.
Uh-oh.
He's using our equipment. He said, who's the owner of this joint? He got us a stage, and Dean Daughtry, who was, you know, in the Atlanta Rhythm Section, was also with us in the Candyman,
mm-hmm.
grabbed him by the throat and put him up against the wall. He says something like, he says, He says, my granddaddy told me, stay away from liars, thieves, and rogues. If you ever touch our equipment again, I'll kill you. And he turned around like if it was some great Hollywood thing. He says, and y'all can print that, too. As if, like, the New York Times was watching us, this every move we made, you know. Y'all can print that, too. But he grabbed him by the throat and put him up against the wall. I'm telling you, Van Morrison's feet were not touching the ground. You know, but he's just such a weasel.
Oh, that'd be on YouTube today. That's just
I love telling people how much I don't like him.
Oh, well, you can tell us all
much. Just like I tell you how cool everybody is, I'll tell you how cool this guy is not.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Besides Roy Orbison, who's some of your favorites that you had a chance to work with and know?
You know, I love Billy Joe Royal. You know who that is?
Oh, yeah. Down by
Billy Joe Royal was a great singer. He has a very distinctive voice that rubs some people the wrong way. But he's a great singer. Gene Pitney was a great singer.
Yes, he was.
I'm trying to think of guys that I really thought were great singers. Frankie Valli was a really nice guy. He wouldn't remember me, but that's okay. I mean, I remember him.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of who I really, really, really... There was a group called Rhinoceros that we liked a lot, by the way, in the 60s.
Yeah, I remember that band.
Yeah, they were like a New York group. And we thought we were so... To be honest with you, I'm not blowing my own horn. I'm talking about the band,
sure.
Not me.
Yeah.
We thought we were so good, we didn't listen to other bands. I think Rhinoceros is about the other band we ever went to listen to.
Wow.
And they were playing a club called The Scene in New York. We went to see Rhinoceros. We thought they were great.
Yeah.
But generally, we were so obnoxious, we thought we were better than everybody else.
Well, Robert Plant used to say that he never listened to anyone else's records when they'd ask him, what do you think of this? I don't have a clue. I've never listened
Orbison
to their records.
The same way.
Who
Orbison
is?
Orbison was the same way.
He was.
Orbison said he didn't want to listen to other people's stuff because he thought that subconsciously he might start copying their stuff.
I could see that. Absolutely.
Now, we would listen to stuff, casually. We both love Jackie Wilson.
Oh,
and
I
love Jackie Wilson still. I think, poor Jackie, you're talking about making some crap records. I mean, I could just hear what his life must have been like, I'm sure, because you've listened to his arrangements, and some of the very schlocky New York studio musician arrangements. I mean, it had to be something like, now, Jackie, you've got to record Danny Boy. You hear? Danny Boy. They'll love it in Vegas. And I could just hear some Jewish manager telling him what to do, and he said, okay, whatever.
Well, hey, now that you mention that name, our good friend Shelley Leibowitz has come out with an incredible collection with SRI Records. It was on last week. And guess who we heard last week? I think you're going to love this tune right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Higher and higher, higher and higher. I said your love,
What about that there?
I mean, really, who sings like that? If Jackie Wilson was in today's environment, I mean, singing like that, you know, this guy sang, he danced, and this guy, he had a band that was, he had a Little Richard's old band called the Upsetters.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw him, he was like the black Elvis. And when if he winked his eye, he had everything down perfect. He winked his eye, the bass drum went boom. Every little thing was taken care of. This guy would look good, worked hard, danced, sang. Oh, man. I love Jackie Wilson.
And that voice. Well, our good friend Shelley Leibowitz, they're releasing a lot of these artists on vinyl and redoing the recordings. And
yeah, you know, I don't hear well enough, really, to know the difference. All I know is that when I had vinyls, it scratched all the times. I had to worry about replacing the needle or the stylus, as they say. Or the record player didn't work right, or the stylus all the way across the whole record. You know, it's,
yes,
well,
I know.
So these guys have really good ears, and there are guys like that, by the way.
Oh, sure.
And I know there are. They claim to really know the difference. The thing I hear the most often is they claim it's warmer, whatever that is.
Yeah, I think so. But what was fun, though, is you have this big album where you could actually read the graphics. And.
Oh, I love that, man. I miss that. I wish that they make CDs so, like, they fold it out.
Yeah.
You know, like origami CD, like, you know. Or like these little chips you get in Chinese restaurants. Just stick them in water and they expand. You can reread them, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know you've probably been asked this question a gazillion times, but I don't care. Who influenced you? Who was your inspiration?
Well, I will tell you, probably Elvis first. Because you remember, go back before Elvis, you know. I sang on the radio as a kid, you know, and there was Perry Como and Eddie Fisher. And I love those guys. And still, I do. I love Jerry Butler. I saw Elvis the first time on, it was a St. Patrick's Day show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a summer replacement show for the Jackie Gleason show. And it was Tommy and Jimmy Dorsey had a summer replacement show. And they had Elvis O'Presley. They gave everybody an Irish name, right?
Yeah.
And I'd never heard that name. I said, what the hell is that? But I didn't know what was coming. And he sang, I believe it was Heartbreak Hotel and Blue Suede Shoes. I'd never heard anything like that, guys. And I went, oh, my God, this is so great. So then he was on again the next week. And I had to tell my ass, what was that guy's name again? Elvis Presley. I'm going, what the hell kind of name is that? You know. I mean, seriously, Elvis Presley. You know, when you're using
right.
When I'm hanging around with the guy's name Mario. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So Elvis Presley sounded even weirder. But Elvis and I loved Ray Charles.
Oh my!
Ray you know, Charles. If my most two seminal moments musically were listening, were seeing Elvis. I saw my 1956. Got a picture of right here in my office. I got it in 1956 from Colonel Tom Parker, signed by Elvis.
Oh, my.
And yeah, and then in about 1962, maybe earlier than that, maybe 1960, 61, I saw Ray Charles with a little six-piece band in a little black club in West Tampa.
Oh.
And my keyboard player, piano player, actually, bass player and I were the only white people in the place.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd never heard anything like that in my life. It was the most visceral feeling I got in my stomach. It was like a gospel meeting. It was a six-piece band. The drummer had like cracked cymbals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the old days, if you had your cymbals cracked, you cut a circle where the crack was, and that would keep the cymbal from cracking more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this drummer had circles cut. It looked like a Herbert Harrison cigarette commercial. Okay. Remember that? I'll eat my hat, you know. Like
yeah.
Well, that's what it looked like. But Ray Charles influenced me like none other. And then the Beatles.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, if you told me, I got one day of my life. They're taking my hearing away.
Mm-hmm.
One day of my life to listen to music. I got either Ray Charles way back when he was with Atlantic Records,
mm-hmm.
or the Beatles. I got to flip a coin, man.
Yeah. And I love the kids talk about their news. I love the first tunes they put out.
You have a Beatle Records?
Yes.
Absolutely. Listen, I just went to see, for the second time, I went to Vegas. I went to see the Beatles show, Love.
Oh, yeah. How is that?
And as sophisticated, as great as those records are and everything, when they play I Want to Hold Your Hand, which is the simplest record they play all night long,
yeah.
the room comes alive to me.
Oh,
it's the most
love...
vibrant. It's just it just feels so good. You know, it's about Tommy Rowe.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I didn't catch on to the Beatle thing because I thought I was going to be a jazz singer. So I didn't catch on to the British Invasion thing when it first happened.
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy was playing with Tommy Rowe. He came to my band, backed him up, and he did I Saw Her Standing There.
Yeah.
I looked out of the audience, and I could see the way they were moving, and I went, I've not been getting something that's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I made a conscious effort to pay attention to to the Beatles. Not that I didn't like them, but I didn't love them.
Yeah.
You know, to me it was like glorified country music.
It is.
But the development, the way they made records and their creativity and the growth was just, I'm still enchanted by the whole thing.
Well, I have the Love CD in my truck, and I'll be playing that, and I'll play that introduction to I Want to Hold Your Hand, because that just explodes. I mean,
yeah, no doubt. No, it jumps out. You know, I'm walking out of that place, and a guy I've never seen in my life, wouldn't know him if I ran over him,
mm-hmm.
walks up to me. He must have been at the most 35 years old, at the most.
Yeah.
I don't know him. He walks up to me, puts his arm around me, and says, man, there will never be another band like this.
Uh-uh.
I'm thinking to myself, I have an emotional attachment to these songs because I remember
yeah.
where I was when I heard them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or maybe we're going to learn this song, or this song means this. I mean, it was a different world.
Yeah.
This guy doesn't have emotional attachment to that. And
yeah.
he's talking about how great they are. And then I'm start thinking, there's maybe 20, 25 songs in the show.
Mm-hmm.
They got at least another 20 or 25 show. They could have Love, too, somewhere else.
They could. And it's so beautiful how they mix the different songs together. I know George Martin's son was responsible
yeah,
for that.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, if you go, I've been
yeah.
twice, and I'll go for a third time. It's actually better the second time because it's so overwhelming.
I can imagine.
To see it. I mean, it is overwhelming. Oh, my God, am I going to catch everything here?
Well, I have a lot of the recordings. In the 80s, when the Beatles weren't cool, and Abbey Road, the master tapes, employees were literally taking them out of the vaults and taking them home and making copies.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the lax copyright laws in places like Italy, they were released on CD, and when you hear these CDs and how they're putting songs together, it is just, it's just, nobody did it like them. Even we
no
had
doubt.
We had Joe Vitale on. He was in the Lennon sessions in Los Angeles with Ronnie Wood and a bunch of other artists.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about how John Lennon, they'd play basically the song, he'd play it, but he wouldn't tell you what to play. He'd just basically say, play what you want, let's see how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And they just do it over and over, and then gradually...
Yeah, on four tracks, by the way.
Yeah, and you get a...
That's all. Those records are cut... Through Sgt. Pepper, they were cut on four tracks.
And
I got something that'll slay you. I tell you what, I had the most... I'm like, did you see the movie Zelig? The Woody Allen movie,
yeah.
Z-E-L-I-G.
Yeah, Doctor.
It's about this guy that shows up everywhere. That's me. I'm like Forrest Gump. I'm one of these guys that happens to show up for stuff. I don't know
yeah.
how I do it, but I'm just happen to be there. I was there when they recorded Sgt. Pepper.
You were.
I heard the tracks we were recording. Graham Nash was recording at Candyman, and we used the Beatles equipment to record.
Oh my.
Mm-hmm. We got to spend some time. I'm constantly amazed at things that happen to me. Believe me.
Oh, we want to hear them all.
I don't even like to talk about some of the stuff because it just sounds like I'm bragging.
Yeah.
But,
well, we like bragging.
The next day we went back to Electric Lady, Abbey Road, to pick up some tapes or something. And I hear this song being playing and with a clarinet going, do 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 do. And it was When I'm 64.
Yeah.
And George Martin was there, and he's like, listen to the songs. There was no vocal. But they told me it was the new Beatles stuff that they were mixing, and I'm going, that's the craziest shit I ever heard in my life. sorry for the language. That's the craziest stuff I ever heard in my life. What the heck are they doing? Got a clarinet on there? What is this? They've gone berserk. And then you hear the record come out and you go, oh my God, this is brilliant.
Yeah. I can remember comments were made before the album. The Beatles are done. We haven't heard from them in a while. And
yeah, right. I know. I remember that too. It's become almost fashionable to knock them. People forget about that.
Yeah,
I remember that period very well. It was like let's take, I claim they always threw a snowball at the guy with a big hat, Yeah, it became very fashionable, to knock the Beatles. But listen, one of my favorite albums is the one that no one ever talks about, and that's Magical Mystery Tour. It's got Fool on the Hill. It's got Magical Mystery Tour. It's got I Am the Walrus. I mean, please.
And there was a great movie, too.
I don't think I've ever seen the movie. I think I've seen part of it.
Yeah.
The Magical
They kind of made it up as they went. It was one of those deals.
Yeah,
created kind of like Duck Dynasty now. One of the great songs on there that was a single that was kind of ignored over the years is Baby, You're a Rich Man.
Oh, God, yes, man. Yeah,
I love that song. Oh,
we played with Blood, Sweat, and Tears before they were Blood, Sweat, and Tears. In fact, we were there the night, they were just a four-piece group. We were there the night that Al Kooper announced the name of the band. It was called the Al Kooper Band, and they decided they were going to have a name, and they decided to call it the Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Yeah.
So we were there that night. But Al Kooper used to play that weird sound of something, an instrument called andoline. Mm-hmm. And we used to hear him play that andoline. He said, man, sure does sound like Baby, You're a Rich Man. But
wow.
You're right. No one ever talks about that song. That's a perfect example of how you can have another Beatles love, too. That's one of the songs you could have on there.
Oh, and it just goes on and on. I mean, there were so many songs that and even their classics, Billy J. Kramer recorded I Call Your Name, which has always been one of my favorite Beatles songs.
Mm-hmm.
You Can't Do That, another favorite of mine.
It's funny you mentioned that when I said that, my love, that was like Orbison. I always thought that You Can't Do That should have been a Ray Charles song. I got something for you, baby, that might cause you pain. Ray Charles could have killed
that. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, and the piano doing the 12-string guitar part there, that intro.
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding. Oh, that's just, oh, my gosh. And then we can talk about, if you want to talk about the early stuff that really kind of was so innovative, even before Hendrix, a little bit of feedback John Lennon created for I Feel Fine, another tune that was just like, holy crap, what a...
Yeah, right.
And we're so lucky because you can remember we'd wait for the next song to be released. And it wasn't like the albums, the early albums weren't really promoted. You just one day saw them at the record store.
Right, it's true, it's true. Hey, there's a new Beatle album. That's right.
Yeah, I can remember going to a place, a discount store, and there was Beatles 6. I go, whoa, I didn't know that was even out.
Yeah, no, I love that. They were a very big influence on me, you know.
So many.
And I was fortunate, you know, also, I mean, I hung around, you know, when you get to the Atlanta Rhythm Section, you're with a guy, you know, like Buddy Bowie, who was our producer, writer, manager, Svengali, you know, he was everything.
Yeah.
You know, and he's a good songwriter. I mean, he wrote this also at Classics 4. I mean, people talk about songwriters, excuse me, how great they are. Most of them are not very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Buddy Bowie's a songwriter. I mean, Faded Photographs, covered now with Lines and Creases, Tickets Torn in Half, Memories and Bits and Pieces.
Oh,
those
my.
Are words.
Yes.
You know, Don Henley's a great songwriter. Paul Simon's a great songwriter. Billy Joel's a great songwriter. That you don't get much. After that, there's a big drop, in my opinion.
I agree.
I'm not talking about people making good records now. This I'm not talking about that. Because there are records I like and songs that I like, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're really good. It means I like them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's and nowadays, you know, now it sounds so old. The music is just like so much, I don't know what to call it. The songwriting is pathetic.
Well, you know, I have a, when I'm not working on the Atlanta Rhythm Section, I have a band here in Tampa. We play once in a while called Cuckoo Ca-Choo. All we do is 60s music.
Wow.
But our motto is, remember the days before music sucked.
That's so,
you know,
true.
We play only 60s music, but you got to remember, we do all the songs that other bands don't do. We don't do Mustang Sally. We don't do Midnight Hour. We don't do Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog.
Yeah.
You know, we just don't do it. We do God Only Knows. We do I Am the Walrus. We do, you know, hard stuff. We do Four Seasons songs. You know, that's and it's a lot of fun.
Oh, I can imagine. But it's just terrific. Gosh.
No, it's sensational. I mean, and, you know, it's all the top musicians in Tampa that retired years ago quit playing because they said, I'd rather not play. You know, if you're a musician today, if you have children that want to be musicians, tell them to shut up and to study.
Well, that's,
because
funny.
The average musician, you can't make a living like you used to a long time ago being a musician. There used to be clubs. They had something in it called live music with humans playing instruments.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't get that. And if you find a place to play, generally speaking, if you're lucky, you might make a little bit less than you made 30 years ago.
Yeah. I've heard
that. So we're
that.
Lucky.
Yeah.
In my other band, we're all guys, everybody has their own business. We don't do it for the money. You know, we just do it because we want to, you know, do it one last time before we all take a dirt bath, you know?
Sure, absolutely. And when you do it out of love, it just makes it that much better.
No doubt, no doubt. It's great when you reach a point in your life when you can do it for love, by the way.
Yeah. No,
you know, when you're young, you can't do that, man. You start wanting to have a family. You got to take care of your family, man. I mean, I retired for 25 years because I wanted to come home and raise my family.
Yeah.
You know, well, but, you know, you have to do what's right. And it's very difficult.
It's,
you know,
to be
selfish enough to be a musician.
Yeah. It's,
that's the truth. There's a certain amount of selfishness, you know, of self-indulgence. I'm saying, this is what I want to do. You know, and everybody in your family says, well, you know, he wants to do this, he wants to do that. You know, that's what he loves.
Yeah.
But you got to some point, you got to say, well, it's not always all about me, you know.
Yeah. I compare aspiring musicians to Olympic athletes.
Yeah, right.
Because think of all the money that has to go behind these athletes to train and to do all this. And they may not get zero.
Yes, and ironically, you know, they're all theoretically amateurs. And the meaning of amateur is someone who does something for love. You know?
Not very many of them get a Wheaties box or, you know, or a...
They can get sponsorships now. They help, you know, help them a little bit. But most of those Olympic athletes, they make $15,000 a year. They don't get endorsements, you know, other than the major sports.
There's a lot of sacrifice. And
that's right.
kind of like musicians in a,
yep.
a way.
It's easier if you're alone, Larry, but and doctor. But if you know if you have a family, it's a different story, man. You got to take care of business.
Well, my family's four-legged, so
there you go.
Pretty. God love you, Rodney. It's been fantastic to have you on the show tonight.
Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed it as well. I talk about things I don't normally talk about.
Well,
we've barely scratched the surface.
I know.
There is so much more out there.
There is. And Rodney has some tunes that we weren't able to get on tonight, so that's our perfect excuse to have Mr. Justo back with us on the show.
Anytime. It's been a lot of fun,
please.
Man. Like I said, it's talking about things we don't normally get to talk about. So anytime, I've enjoyed it, and I wish you guys the best.
Well,
that's
thanks.
What we're here for.
And
if you're ever in Tampa, look me up. You know, I know it gets cold up there.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
We talked about that.
I'm in Tampa. I have an uncle that lives there on Piccadilly, and I.
Oh, shut up!
Yeah.
I'm in town and country.
Yeah.
Dude, I lived on George Road, one street over.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I lived on DeMarco Road, right off of George Road. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Piccadilly's a block away from me.
I know that neighborhood very well.
Oh my gosh. That's where my first house I lived in with my wife. Yep.
That's now something. I have to ask you, Rodney, because I'm really upset that we played Spooky and you didn't even you sang on Imaginary Lover, didn't you?
No, that was Ronnie. Have Ronnie sang on the hits? You know, I just.
Oh,
I
ain't gonna play that.
I just hang around.
Oh my god, I'm so upset with myself. Well, shoot, my goodness.
But I know everything. You know, I was around because I had a band. You know, when I left them. ARS the first time. I had, as they say, creative differences.
Mm-hmm.
And I left and I moved to New York and became a studio musician. You know, but before then, you know, you mentioned Bobby Caldwell. You know, Bobby and I are pals for a long time. We played in a band called Noah's Ark. After the Candyman broke up, we had Noah's Ark, and Bobby was in that band. And then I left to join the Atlanta Rhythm Section.
Bobby's been on a few times.
He's great.
Oh, he's a character. You don't want to get him and me in the same room.
Well, that's
a show.
Yeah, that's a show.
Let me
that's
tell you, you get
show.
Him and he and I in the same room, you lose your breath, you lose your turn.
Well, we don't care about that. We need to put that one together.
Sometimes my phone rings, I see Bobby's name, I go, I can't answer. If I pick up the phone, it's an hour and a half.
Well,
I have an hour and a half, you know.
when he calls me, it's like that. I'll give Bobby. Oh wait a minute, I haven't got enough time. That just can't.
Right. But I love talking to Bobby, man. He's a funny guy too, man. We do a lot of funny stuff together.
Well, we were going to have him on the show, and I haven't even discussed it with Dr. Day, and Bobby's a little reluctant to talk about. Some of his interest as far as extraterrestrial beings. Has he ever talked to you about that?
No, I hear, you know, it's, you know, how people talk different things to different people.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of a straight-laced guy, you know, but people tell me, boy, I got Bobby on the phone. Or he starts talking to me about Martians. And I'm going, what?
Right.
Oh, you got the cosmic consciousness uniting with the universal mind. I'm going, well, we talk about drums and guitars and stuff like that when we talk, you know.
Well, we're going to put that show together, Rodney Justo and Bobby Caldwell. Hey, Bobby, Rodney, thank you very much. It was great to have you.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
Look me up. Yeah, we'll do that.
Next week,
on the show, Harvey Kubernick. Have a great week, everybody.
All right, bye. Thank you.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.